Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. For decades, Cobourg's waterfront stored massive, towering piles of coal waiting to be loaded onto ships bound for the American steel factories. Once those factories modernized, the piles disappeared. In fact, up until the late 1980s, it was still an industrial area with huge oil tanks storing fuel. It's hard to imagine today when one looks and sees the residential development, the parks, the marina, the campground, and the historic beach that has attracted people since the 19th century. For many, the waterfront is the gem of the town. To merely mention any changes to Cobourg's waterfront these days, and you will be guaranteed to get an earful. Regardless of the person's position, whether to upgrade, expand, leave it alone, preserve it, know that it will be a passionate, intense defense. 2 weeks ago, Cobourg Council debated the future of the East Pier and campgrounds as they tried to move forward in an effort to meet one of their stated strategic objectives, to get the East Pier fixed after being closed to vehicular traffic since February 2018. For some, that is a long time. There are politicians who feel the pressure to get it done in short order, yet others seek to steer the process in another direction to ensure the public gets a voice in the decisions before anything goes forward. The results could be delays in completing the project in the near future. With me to talk about the waterfront is Cobourg Councillor responsible for Parks and Recreation, Emily Chorley. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Before we get to unpacking the most recent debate about the waterfront, what is it in your mind that makes the waterfront such a contentious issue for people?
Well, any form of waterfront development is contentious, I think, primarily because so many people use the waterfront. So many people integrate it into their daily lives. I know that I walk down to the waterfront with my family in the summer at least 3 or 4 times a week. And so it's a touchstone for the community. It's what makes Cobourg very unique. And I think it's embedded in the almost social fabric of our community.
But when you watch people at public meetings, I mean, it gets very emotional, almost to a point where there are tears or outrage. Why do you think it's so emotionally charged?
Well, it is controversial. It is emotionally charged, and I think because it's dear to people, because it's attached to their memories. I know I've spoken with many people, longtime residents of Cobourg, who have really fond memories, particularly of driving out onto the pier with some Tim Hortons, taking in the views, spending their youth enjoying the beach. So it's very wrapped up in people's history here, and that I think that's why people are passionate about it.
So then you, as a politician, how do you navigate these waters? Because the ideas and opinions are so diverse, and if I can say it, loaded with conviction.
How do I navigate that?
Yes.
Well, I navigate it by being as objective as I can. And for me, always taking a posture of listening as my first step. I want to hear from the public. I want to hear all of their views. And I want to be able to then look at all the options, understand the pros and cons, and then weigh those up, always keeping in mind, what are our priorities? We've got shifting priorities on council. So we need to be flexible, we need to be listening, and that's my basic approach.
What are some of the tensions you see between the various groups and the people? And I don't want to answer this for you, but I want to be clear. So you have people like the wildlife group that comes forward and wants to preserve the West Beach and the west side of the basin for birds because it's a migratory stop and it's they say it's ecologically significant. Then you have the sailors and the paddlers who want to use this area for their training and enjoyment. So that's one of the most classic tensions that you see. So what are some of the tensions you see playing against each other as you look at the waterfront and moving forward?
Yeah, I think you've outlined some of them there, but you know, I wouldn't characterize them entirely as tensions. I would characterize them as different approaches, different priorities. People have different visions for sections of our waterfront. I don't think it's really at the point of tension. I think those differences of opinion have always been expressed in a very respectful way.
So then how then do you negotiate those out so that people feel that, yes, the waterfront is being used in the way that I see it being particularly a good thing, and yet meeting all those, I don't want to keep using the word diverse, but different visions of what it should be used for. You know, I want to go out and do my dragon boat racing, as one person might say, or, you know, I'd like to have more places so that we can attract tourists and my business can thrive.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of thoughts that sort of bump up against each other.
Well, they do. They bump up against each other, but I don't think that means that they can't be reconciled. So I'm always looking for ways that we can meet the needs of different user groups and reach a point of agreement so that we can keep a section of beach, of waterfront naturalized, that we can keep in mind our migratory birds and our bird lovers, so that the members of the yacht club can absolutely be able to enjoy our waterfront as well, so that all of the different user groups feel that they are being heard and that they are being accommodated.
Okay, so let's move on then and start to talk about the East Pier and the campgrounds. Now, if you read the report and you listen to the debate during council earlier this month, it seemed a bit more complex than just here's the East Pier and here's the campground and let's go forward.
Yeah.
Let's just start with the East Pier. Can you break down the various components of the report, starting with the East Pier, and what is it that has been put before council that you want to look at?
Right. Well, we have two basic reports that are informing our decision-making on the East Pier. And the first is the Waterfront User Needs Assessment, so what I call the Waterfront Plan. And that report came to the previous council, was adopted in 2018. And then we have an engineering assessment, the Shore Plan Engineering Assessment. And that was delivered to the town late last year, so in November 2018. And the Shore Plan Engineering Assessment in particular, it outlines four basic options for making structural repairs to the East Pier, because we've basically seen some settlement issues in recent years on the asphalt deck, and that has been the reason why the East Pier has been closed to vehicular traffic. So those four basic options, for me, they are really about the function of the pier going forward. The basic question is, what kind of activity should take place on the pier? And that the answer to that question is going to dictate which of these options we need to pursue. So the first option outlined in the Shore Plan Engineering Assessment is naturalization of the pier. It's saying, you know, an option is to basically turn the pier into parkland and pedestrian-only access. And that would be the cheapest option. Now, the second option is to replace the top fill material and pave the pier, and that would be for light vehicle traffic. The third option is to heavily reinforce the pier, basically create a piled deck using a steel piled foundation. That would be for heavy activity. It would be for activity like the Midway, which used to be on the pier for festivals, and for boat lifting activity using a crane. That's very heavy activity, and we would need to make a heavy investment in making that kind of structural repair, and that would be well over $3 million for that option. The fourth option is to do a kind of combination hybrid of an area for light vehicle traffic and an area of naturalization for pedestrian use. So cars could be given access on the west side of the pier, and a natural parkland could be created on the east side of the pier. And that option runs at about $700,000.
Now, in the report that came out, of the four options, two were discounted in the report based on previous public consultations done by the previous council in that waterfront assessment process that had taken place. How do you respond to the fact that the report outlined that those two options, based on public consultation, were not acceptable?
Yeah, well, my basic approach is that we've got four options here for making structural repairs to the pier, and I think we need to start with these four options. I think we're not ready as yet to narrow down the options because we haven't heard from the public. So my approach is really to explain these four options to the public, give them an opportunity to share their views, share their vision for the kind of use that should take place on the pier in the decades coming. And from there, then narrow down our options and move forward.
All right. But then if I go back to that waterfront assessment report that was done, that was a pretty extensive survey. I mean, you had 2,000 residents participated in that. There were all kinds of meetings that were held. There were user group consultations. I mean, it was probably the largest consultation I've ever seen in the history of the town. I mean, 2,000 people participating is pretty intense. So why do you feel that there's a need to then go back and do this again? Aren't we just mowing the same grass?
No, I don't think we're mowing the same grass at all. I think it's very important that we start to drill down into the details of each project. And it was clearly stated when the waterfront plan came to council, I think it was in June 2018, it was clearly stated that each and every recommendation, each and every project in that plan would need to come to council and have its own set of public engagement and its own decision-making process before any of those recommendations could go forward. So the scope of the waterfront user needs assessment is tremendous. It covers the whole waterfront, lots of projects over the next 24 or 25 years. What we are talking about is a specific project. We need to get the pier up and running again. And so I think it's important that we take a much more granular look at that project. We understand in detail the options in front of us, and we have a community conversation specifically about that project.
There may be some people who are anxious to get the pier repaired and get moving forward that might say, look, we're spending money on top of money we've already spent. And you know, even in the debate last week when council was talking about this, Deputy Mayor Seguin made a point to say, you know, look at the Victoria Square project. Mm. You know, we spent all that money, got all those plans, and then we shelve it. How do you answer to those people who are concerned that, you know, we're just spending more money, going back to the public, we're going to hear the same kinds of things from the same groups? And again, we were talking about all those different needs. I mean, they really don't change much. Why can't we just say, okay, we've done our consultation, let's get it going, and let's not spend any more money on this. Let's spend money on getting the pier replaced.
Well, I agree. I think we need to be very conscious of the money being spent as we move through this process. But actually, what council decided was to take quite a conservative approach in terms of spending. Public engagement doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It does take a little bit of time. And I would say that the questions being put to the public for this project, for the East Pier, are very different questions than those that were put to the public when the waterfront user needs assessment and public engagement process was taking place. The questions are different, and that's because we didn't have the shore plan engineering assessment when the waterfront plan was being put together a couple of years ago. The shore plan engineering assessment is giving us detailed information on the current state of the pier and our options for repairing it and moving forward. So we have fresh information to present to the public, and it's going to be a different public engagement process, a different set of questions and conversations to be had there.
So can you give us an example of something that would be specific to this consultation that makes it markedly different?
Well, the fact that we've got these four options and we have a rough financial estimate of how much they're going to cost. When the waterfront user needs assessment was being put together, we didn't really know the structural status of the East Pier. Now, Shore Plan have come in. They've done a dive. They've navigated all around the perimeter of the pier. They've examined the structure underwater. They have dug three trenches across the top of the pier and looked at the substrate material and tried to understand exactly what kind of material the pier has been constructed out of. Because this pier is 180 years old. It has had additions. It has evolved over time. And so we have a much more intimate understanding of the status of the pier and what it will take to get it up and running again. We've got that information now. we need to put it out into the public domain in a way that's clear and understandable and start to gain feedback. And that's very different from the waterfront user needs assessment.
Okay, so that then looks at the East Pier, but there was some other material that came forward within the report that talked about additional items, more aesthetic items, railing, you know, what type of lighting would we have, those kinds of things. That, what about that aspect of it? Are we going to be talking about those kinds of things, or how's that going to be dealt with?
We absolutely need to talk about those beautification elements for the East Pier. My personal view is that we may not focus on that in the very first public meeting that we have. The decision that we need to make up front is what is the basic function of the pier going forward? What kind of use should it sustain? We need to decide about the structural repairs to the pier. How much do we need to reinforce this pier? Once we make that decision and we move a little further down the road in the process, then we can really get into a conversation about seating areas and lighting and pathways and railings for safety and all of those other beautification elements. And I would say that that's not, those two decisions are not mutually exclusive. We need to always be mindful of the end result in every conversation, because if we need to lay electrical services or plumbing services, we will want to do that in that first step of repairs, in that structural repair stage. So I'm open to discussing all of those options when we have our public meeting in September, but I really hope that our conversation can be very focused on the first step, the first decision. What kind of structural repairs do we need to make?
In that light then, when we have these meetings and then moving forward, it sounds to me, if I can use this metaphor, and correct me if it's not a good metaphor, but I kind of think of it like building a house. We talk about a foundation and then we talked about the rest of the building. Mm. And so, you know, are we talking about just about laying that foundation and then, you know, we're going to talk later about what the house is going to look like? Or is it, how is that going to work in people's minds? Because in the debate, there was a lot of talk about, you know, let's get everything done now so that people can look at something and go, oh, look at how pretty it'll be with all that grass or flowers or beautiful steel rail or whatever it is that it's decided. Whereas when I hear you talk, I always keep thinking about, you know, let's just get the flipping concrete done and get the beams in and get the electrical run and let's just get our pier done. And then we'll talk about, you know, whether we want to have heritage lighting or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Rob. It is a good metaphor. I mean, we are talking basically about the foundations of the pier. And I think we're going to move through this process in a step-by-step manner. Council has authorized some public engagement. They've authorized a first working meeting where the public can come, learn about the basic options, and share their views. That's going to happen in early September. And based on that feedback, then we will navigate kind of where to go from there. Do we need to hold more public meetings that are just focused on the beautification elements, or will it all come together in the first meeting? So we're feeling our way to a certain degree, but I'm confident that we are going to navigate this process in a way that's going to get us to a fantastic result. I think we have to be grounded in the numbers, though. So the level of reinforcement that goes into the pier in some ways is going to also have an impact on the beautification elements. If we choose to make a reinforced steel-piled deck, which costs many millions of dollars, we probably won't be able to afford lots of beautification elements towards the end of this process. So we have to always be grounded in the numbers as we move forward. If we choose an option where we aren't spending huge amounts of money on the structural repairs, maybe we will be able to afford a few more beautification elements.
So it sounds to me like you have a number in mind, and I don't know if that's really come out that says this is the max amount the council is prepared to spend on this particular project. Do you have a number?
I don't have a number in mind as yet, and I think that will become clear as we speak to more and more members of the public. What I do know is that council in this year's budget has authorized $100,000 for the East Pier project, and that's for this year, for 2019, and for the campground, $30,000. And this is really for preliminary work. Going forward, it will definitely cost a lot more money than that. We need to do it in a fiscally responsible way, because for the East Pier in particular, we're funding this by debenture. We are essentially, as a community, borrowing the money to undertake this project. And we need to make sure that we are not going to be imposing a financial burden on future councils and future generations.
But then again, sometimes, you know, you build something like Victoria Hall or, you know, Victoria College, and we all 100, 200 years later are going, wow, you know, isn't this an amazing thing? So, I mean, you know, you can look at it in that way and historic, and let's spend the money and do something beautiful. Or again, you can say, you know, let's have a budget and let's stick to it. So
yeah,
those things
absolutely
have to be negotiated, obviously. Let's talk about, you mentioned the cabin ground, and I want to talk about it a little bit as well, because in the assessment that was done in the surveys, there was a really strong set of numbers that came back that said, don't change the campground. I think it was somewhere in the range of 2/3 to 3/4 of people said keep the campground. But when they talk about it in some other questions, there is a not as strong a feeling about what to do with it. They don't want it to be a hotel. They don't want it to be just parkland. They want something there, but they're not sure what to do. In terms of what's your sense of people's feelings around the campground when you when you're talking to people?
Well, the campground has been an issue that's divided people, divided citizen opinion, certainly. But through the waterfront user need assessment, I think it was pretty clear that the recommendation is not to change the campground, not to use that site for development of a hotel or other options that have been talked about. And it's my understanding that this council really doesn't have any intention of developing that piece of land. It's about working with the campground and making some small enhancements. The waterfront plan recommends, in particular, upgrades to the basic services to the campground, the water, sanitary, and electrical services. I think that is something that really needs to be looked at. Staff have made it clear to council and to the public that those services are in urgent need of upgrade. So that will certainly be something that we will be discussing in our public engagement process through August and into September. But there are other options as well suggested in the waterfront plan. Things like creating more of a buffer zone between the campground and the beach, moving the pathway out towards the beach and having a grassy area in front of the campground, making some landscape improvements, and even having a multi-use trail connection that goes around the perimeter of the campground. So there's some interesting options there. And again, it will depend on what the public are really asking for. And council will need to balance all of these options with all of the other priorities and demands.
Now, some people feel very strongly that that should be public space, that it would be a perfect tie-in between Victoria Park and the beach and then the pier and then the marina harbor and the West Beach. It kind of makes it one contiguous. How do you talk to those people about what you're planning to do? Because by investing this kind of money, then what you're saying is for the next 5, 10, 15 years, that campground's going to continue to be there.
Yes, I would say my personal view is that the campground is actually positive activity on our waterfront, particularly late at night. And that means that people can walk along our waterfront late at night. They feel safe. There's a little community there. People have eyes and ears on our waterfront, and there's a lot of value in that. I also think Victoria Park is a fantastic public space. We have the boardwalk and the beach that stretch out across in front of the campground and then bring together the East Pier. So I think it's pretty continuous the way it is. I don't really see any driving impetus for making a drastic change to the campground. It's really about upgrading and maintaining what we have, making it work a little bit better. It does return a profit to the town, so that's positive. And I don't think drastic change in that area is really a priority at this stage.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break for some commercials. My guest today is Coburg Councillor Emily Chorley. We are talking about the future of the waterfront. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 897 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Consider This. I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're tuned to Northumberland 89.7 FM. My guest today is Emily Chorley, the coordinator of Parks and Recreation, and she's helping us understand the recent debate over the future of the waterfront that took place earlier this month. costs, we were talking about it just before the break, but costs can seem a bit confusing. Can you help us understand first what is being proposed? Because sometimes, you know, you look at the numbers and we get talking about millions of dollars, then we get talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then something else is $50,000. So I know you've talked about them in different spots, but could you just take some time and just map it out piece by piece? What are we looking at in terms of costs and what's going to be spent in the near future and then moving forward?
Sure, absolutely, Rob. Well, what we're facing at the moment is a decision about how much we need to structurally repair and reinforce the East Pier. And we have those four basic options with an estimate of how much those options would cost. So again, if we were to take the pier and naturalize it into parkland for pedestrian use only, that would be the cheapest option. That would be around $500,000 just for the structural repair. And if we were to reinforce the pier so that light vehicle traffic could go onto the pier, we're looking at just over $1 million for that option. Now, the most expensive option is if we were to create a piled deck that's steel reinforced for heavy activity like the midway or boat lifting activity to be taking place on the pier. That option comes in around $3.8 million just for the structural reinforcement. And if we were to go with the option where we have a combination of light vehicle traffic and pedestrian use, that comes in around $700,000. And then on top of that, we need to think about all of the beautification elements. And there's all kinds of options. We could go to town with that. It could end up being well over $1 million, or we could plan something that's much more conservative. And that would be for benches, lighting, pathways, railings. So the options are endless, and it's difficult to say exactly how much that will cost at this stage.
So, I mean, there's so many factors when you talk about that, because in each of the options, I mean, the first option is very much a people option. So just people go out there. It's very beautiful. It's like sitting in Victoria Park, maybe.
Yep.
That kind of thing. Then you start talking about the other options where you have the steel reinforced, and, you know, you can hear the sailors saying, you know, oh, we want to be able to get our boats in, and people want to feel like they can drive out. And, you know, isn't it great when we put the midway out there at the waterfront? It works out so well for us. So in terms of people and how we use it, how do we balance out those needs then with the fiscal responsibility side of it? Because it could be so easy to just say, look, let's just take the lowest or the middle of the road because, you know, we want to spend just those amount of dollars rather than looking at necessarily the future, or even as we were talking about earlier, the long-term future.
I think we make this decision through public engagement and educating the public on the cost of each option. So that when people share their views with us, it's not just, it would be great to have this, it would be great to have that, bells and whistles kind of options, that we make sure that members of the public understand the costs attached to each option. And then they can share with us whether they feel we should maybe go for the second most expensive option, or whether they are willing to see maybe a little bit of an increase in their tax bill, if they would like all of the bells and whistles. So it's about making an educated, informed decision in partnership with an educated and informed electorate.
Okay, now I want to move on to what was actually decided, because there was a lot went on there when the actual debate was taking place. So there was a recommendation that council was going to do a public engagement process, and then there was some other elements that were added to it. Can you kind of explain what is it exactly that council decided in the final analysis?
Yes, there was a lot of debate about how to proceed with this process, how to launch this project. And really at the heart of the debate was a question about when we spend money on getting conceptual drawings and engineering drawings. And it was proposed by our senior staff that we spend $45,000 upfront on conceptual drawings for each of the four options that I've outlined. These are the four options in the shore plan engineering report. And other members of council felt that it would be better to have a much more relaxed, open discussion with the community first, so that we can talk about the options that are in front of us. We do have some conceptual drawings already in our waterfront plan. We can look at those, we can understand the numbers, and hopefully narrow down our options, and then at that stage, spend some money and order conceptual drawings and get some detailed engineering work done in preparation for those narrowed down options. Essentially, we didn't, some members of council, and I was one of them, didn't want to spend money on options which might not be of any interest to the public.
Okay, so staff, they usually come out with reports, and it usually politicians, and I'm speaking generally now, politicians will say, oh, here's the recommendation, here's the motion that staff has given us, let's pass that motion. Happens all the time. What I notice about this particular issue is that there was a difference between what you proposed in the final motion and what staff recommended. And that seems unusual. First of all, why did you part with what was recommended in the staff report and decided to make your own motion?
Well, I wanted to make the motion a little bit clearer. I wanted to make it so that council is undertaking a step-by-step authorization, so that it's very clear what we are authorizing and when. And then as we move through that, those initial first steps, then again, a report will come to council and we will authorize the next steps. So I wanted to make sure that council is really on top of this process. There's nothing ambiguous in the wording of the motion. And the difference of opinion that I had with the version put forward with staff, in my opinion, was actually pretty minor. Again, it was really about the timing of when we go outside of our staff and bring in other experts, bring in designers, bring in engineers. And I actually have a lot of faith in our staff. I want to see them be a part of this process as well. I don't want everything to be outsourced. We need to outsource at certain times when we need professional advice. But for these early initial steps of public engagement, I think we have the in-house resources to do those early steps in a very cost-effective way.
Were you briefed on the report prior to it coming before council?
I had some discussions with senior staff. I don't think I saw the report. I think I saw the report at the same time that everyone else saw the report when it was attached to the agenda.
So did you have any discussions with the director beforehand that might have given him some indication that you were planning to amend the motion or make changes?
I am in touch with the director, and we did have some conversations about how the public engagement process should proceed. And I shared my views, and I think, you know, we had a discussion about it, and we were pretty much on the same page. And when the motion actually came out, I decided I would like to rewrite it. And maybe it's the part of me that's an editor, that is a stickler for detail, and I decided to make some changes. But I think that's pretty normal. That's a normal way of doing business.
Before council made its final decision, there was actually a moment when several councillors led by Brian Darling and Nicole Beattie tried to expedite the process by reintroducing a previous recommendation. Can you tell us what these councillors were asking members to do and why it was so different from what you eventually got approved?
Well, I don't think it was too different. It was essentially going back to the staff recommendation, and they had some very legitimate concerns about the timelines. And this is something that we do need to be mindful of. So I appreciated their contribution to the discussion. They want to make sure that we're moving through this process in a timely manner. They were hoping that having conceptual drawings up front, right at the beginning of the process, would speed along the process. I don't think we are going to be too slowed down by having a very open discussion without conceptual drawings for each of these four options. So trying to understand the timelines is a challenge as we move through this. But, you know, we all have the same goal. Our goal is that we get that pier repaired, rejuvenated, looking spectacular, and we do it in a timely manner, but also that we do it with close partnership with the public, and that we do it in a fiscally responsible way.
Because one of the things that came out of the debate was the timeline issue, and there was talk that, you know, work was to get done before December, the end of the year, versus this could bleed over into next year, and that there might be some political fallout from that. What is the timeline in your mind? What seems to be a reasonable thing, path that would go forward, and when do you see the pieces falling into place?
My goal has always been to see the pier rejuvenated, repaired, and at least structurally repaired and open again by next summer. That's always been my goal. At this stage, I think it might be an unrealistic goal. I think we're still going to aim for that, but it could be that the timeline runs a little bit longer. It could be that we don't manage to get the actual repair and construction work done until after the busy summer season next year. I'm not sure that we would want construction work taking place there at the same time as our peak tourism season. So we'll need to think about that. And then again, it will depend on the public engagement. If we have a clear front runner for in terms of which option we need to pursue, maybe we will be able to move forward in a manner that allows us to get the pier open by next summer. But probably into the fall or certainly into 2021 would be more realistic.
There is a group in Coburg called Heritage Harbor. They did a no marina expansion campaign several years ago. And I know that you were a big supporter of them. They have your picture on their website beside your campaign poster from last fall and holding one of their posters as well. Some might get the impression that you're doing this, you're taking the path that you're taking right now because you're advocating or pushing for this group. How would you respond to those people?
Oh, I think my position on marina expansion in particular, and that's really what that group was focused on, that particular issue, which was really contentious and has been for several years. My view on that is purely shaped by public opinion. And I think the people of the town of Coburg have said a resounding no to marina expansion. They don't want to see the addition of boat slips into the West Harbor. I think I haven't, on the campaign trail last year, I don't think I met anyone really who was strongly advocating for more boat slips in the West Harbor. It's almost unanimous that the people of Coburg would like that part of the waterfront to be natural, to be pristine, to be a place where you can paddle and enjoy the natural beauty of the waterfront.
Okay, so just so that we're absolutely clear, when we've been talking about these plans, we've been talking about the East Pier and the campground. Yet in some of the reports, you see they talk about the West Headlands, the West West Beach, the west side of the harbor. How is that different from marina expansion? Just so that we're all really clear about that.
Well, marina expansion in the past has been proposed so that off of the center pier, just by the marina building, there has been proposals in the past to put additional boat slips there, which could potentially restrict some of the other boating activities that could take place in the West Harbor. Now, the headland and that part of the waterfront is a little bit different. That's the part that's a little bit more to the west.
Okay, so in no place in any of the documents or anything going forward is that marina expansion a component of what's being proposed at this time?
No, it's not. And in fact, council has made it very clear in their strategic plan that there should be no expansion of the marina into the West Harbor during this term of council.
All right, then. In the report, when we do see references to the West Harbor, the West Headland, which is that strip of land that goes up and goes into the breakwater, and then the West Beach, which is where the boardwalk goes westward and is sort of a wilder area, stony beach, that kind of thing. What are the plans? How do they relate, because they were mentioned in the report several times, to what's going on then?
Well, during our budget deliberations, there was also a proposal to introduce pathways. And this, again, is a recommendation in the waterfront user needs assessment to have pathways that go onto the headland so that people can walk along there and enjoy the view and that we can have better linkages across the waterfront from the wooden boardwalk to the west all the way across to the marina area. So that has been put on hold at the moment so that we can really focus on the East Pier and the campground.
Okay, so what's next from here then?
Well, what's next is that the town is going to start to utilize its new software, which is called Bang the Table. This is public engagement software, and we are hoping that this will be launched in August. So it will be a platform for sharing information on this particular project involving the East Pier and the campground, and enabling members of the public to actually share their views, to post comments. It's a kind of survey software so that we can start to gather feedback from the public. So that's the first step in our public engagement process. And the second step will be an open working meeting held at the Coburg Community Center in early September. And I'd like to invite all of the residents of Coburg come out, learn more about the options that we have in front of us for the East Pier and the campground. Come and learn and share your views.
Well, there you have it. Mark those dates on your calendar, because I'm sure a lot of people will want to be there. I want to thank you, Emily Chorley, for being here today and talking about the future of the waterfront. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And now for your consideration. I would like to draw your attention to a small item announced by MPP David Piccini's office earlier this week about changes to employment services. The Ontario government is about to launch a pilot project to integrate those programs offered to help people find jobs, such as Watton Employment, Durham College, and Sir Sanford Fleming College, with the social assistance programs. That is, programs like Ontario Works and ODSP, or the Ontario Disability Support Program, among others. Those programs are run by Northumberland County for now, but there are not a lot of details, and it's not clear how integrated they will become. But the government is promising efficiency and cost effectiveness, as well as a simpler system for users. They will be reducing the number of offices down from 61 to 3. It is something worth keeping an eye on, and I would encourage you to keep an eye on the local news, especially Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news, for what is going to be going on with this issue across the county, or visit our website at northumberland897.ca. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today. Please join me every week as we talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. If you have any suggestions or would like to hear a particular guest on the show, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com with your ideas. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you are on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. Your feedback means a great deal to me, and I would love to hear from you. If you would like to listen to this show or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time to listen in today, and I hope over the next week you will continue to consider this.